is Epic Grease Media Podcast, episode 2.
We're back after a good couple months. We went to our first convention for the summer, really, which was a big deal for us. So we wanted to focus this episode on that and also talk about our experiences at the convention and its Southern Fried Gaming Expo.
Southern Fried Gaming Expo, it's just a great fun weekend, and it's one of those where, you know, you pay for a membership, right, and you can play games. There's panels, there's tabletop games, there's something for everybody, even if you're not like a competitive gamer. My favorite part of the convention is honestly just seeing others enjoy what's going on, because, you know, you start with this little idea of, wouldn't it be cool if, but just to see the people come back again and again and again and recognize familiar faces, I just love seeing everybody be happy.
First of all, though, shout out to Preston Burt for having us as a media guest there. And we got to cover the con in a really awesome and like exclusive way. So thank you for doing that. I enjoyed my time there. And it's actually one of those conventions that you feel like you're traveling back in time, because it has like a nice 90s, 80s kind of vibe. So I like that about it. Like the feel of it is very like Saturday morning cartoon kind of vibe. Like you have like a, you feel like a kid again for anyone who's like a 90s kid. So that's what we really love about Southern Fried Gaming Expo.
Also, it's a really great convention if you haven't started going to any. It's very family friendly, and it's along the smaller side. It's their 10th year this year, but it was nice to be able to actually get in. You don't have to worry about running across four hotels to get to your panel, or, you know, not being able to play the games, because they have a lot of arcade games open to play for free, which was fun.
Yeah.
Spent hours in there. Lots of vendors that weren't like overly crowded. So it's one of those nice little smaller conventions that is going to grow eventually, but it's a nice way to get in on the ground floor and go to get your feet wet with conventions.
I agree. And it's at the Cobb Galleria, which is Cumberland, next to Cumberland Mall in Marietta, Georgia, which isn't far from where we are. So it wasn't too bad of a drive, and parking was $10 the whole weekend, which is pretty good. That's like old school Atlanta prices. That's not like now Atlanta prices. So now you pay like $45 for one day.
Yeah, I was about to say, one of the cheapest day that we could ever find was like at least 35, maybe 25 if you went on Thursday.
Yeah, and we thought we got lucky with when we got 25, even though like for some people that might be a bit pricey as well. So, which parking is expensive in the city, so I was expecting to pay like a lot more. But the first day we went was Saturday. The pass pickup was really easy, and it was actually a really fun time, just kind of like hanging out with fellow gamers or just gaming fans in the line. And
but they were all very friendly.
And something sad happened to me on Saturday when we went. I took my deodorant, because taking deodorant is important at conventions. Anyone who doesn't say it's not important is lying to you. And I dropped my Dr. Squatch deodorant, which is really one of my favorites. Yeah. And I didn't drop it on purpose. My bag fell out of Chris's car, because he's nice enough to drive. Thank you for driving that day. And like it rolled out. And I didn't notice it until the day we went back.
Yeah, it was still in the, it fell out and rolled under my car, and we didn't realize it. And it was in the parking lot when he came back the next
Sunday.
It was hilarious. We were joking, like, do we pick it up? Do we not? I'm like, somebody might have picked it up and used it. Just, I mean, you know, if it was down, I'm like, heck no.
Yeah, but you don't know.
It was hilarious, because I'm like, somebody probably hasn't, but you don't want to risk it.
And it was a new, what would you call it? Like
a new tube
container or whatever. Oh, what you call it? A new stick. Going back to Southern Fried Gaming, like the way they present the con over there is really cool, because like you get to walk up and it has like the nice like overlay of graphics as you walk up these huge stairs into the Galleria, and then you get to see everyone waiting on their passes, or like the people like set up to play board games or play their like old school like tabletop games. And it like opens up a whole world to you, which is really cool. And all of the panels are in these little rooms, which are air conditioned, which is pretty like nice during summertime.
Again, speaking of the video games, they're all free to play, but they had a whole lot of pinball games, and they had a couple of really cool ones that we got to play for a little bit. One was Foo Fighters based.
Yeah, that was cool.
They had a huge Venom set up. They had like seven or eight No, it was probably more than that. It was probably like 12 different Venom pinball machines. It was all the same game, or two versions of the game. But they had those set up, and they had a huge, giant Venom there for you to take pictures with and all that. And it was really cool.
All this is on our Instagram at Epic Bruce Media. Just check the SFGE story. It says SFGE 2023. And you can check out the some of the footage that we got.
We went to the 80s prom, and it was their big party. Every convention has a party, and it was really fun because we've never been to their party before.
But yeah.
They had an 80s cover band called Guardians of the Jukebox. Job. Like, we go to conventions, we go to their parties, and they're usually like, okay, they're playing songs and people are dancing. It's like, okay, whatever. But this one was a live band performing, and they were really good.
Yeah, they killed it. It felt like you got your own personal concert because you're just that close to the stage, and everyone in there were just like 80s music fans, and people were like dancing, and I think you can get drinks at that time because it's like nighttime, so you can do that too if you wanted to. Because like little bars on the outside, and a little like a cola bar with like the big pirate barrels of soda. Yeah. That was really cool. And if you go through the cola bar, you get like a collectible cup.
Oh, you're talking about the Wild Bill's?
Yeah,
it was a little metal tankard kind of thing,
you could buy it,
and then you get like free refills for that day.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool. At the party, they also had like a rave feel to it. They had glow sticks and glow bracelets and all that. So it was pretty fun. And then they also had in the back corner, they had where you could take prom pictures, and they had like a punk rock kind of brick background, which was really cool.
And they played so many jams. I was in my happy place just hearing those songs live because like, I'm never going to get a chance to probably hear those bands play those songs, right? So you get to hear like the different sounds within the song, and just see someone perform it live is just a totally different experience. So
the audience was singing along with all the songs they could.
You know,
it was just like all the traditional, you know, I hate to say this, traditional white people bar singing karaoke, like in the whole band, everybody singing. Yeah, it was the whole thing. So it was really cool.
And I have to admit, I came away from that prom dance, 80s dance, it was called 80s dance, loving Everybody Wants to Rule the World even more, because hearing something live and then like having it playing in your head, you know, I'm like a music fan obviously, but like just hearing that and like having it play in your head, I'm like, oh, and then you listen to the song again, it like has so much more like meaning to you. I got like a whole new impression of the song. So yeah, song's really good. Hearing it live was amazing. Shout out to Guardians of the Jukebox. They definitely like, they got you hyped at the party. Like before, we were like, I wonder what this is going to be like, because we've never been there, and people were kind of like chill and hanging out but not really doing much. As soon as they hit the stage, man, you just get this like electric feeling in your body that you want to go and just like throw your hands up, maybe do a dance and just shout out the lyrics and just have a good time. Like lose all kind of like inhibitions about what you look like if you're dancing. You don't even care. You know?
It was hilarious because it was like older people, it was people who were in high school in the 80s, it was the younger generation who grew up on these songs as the quote-unquote classics,
dude. Yes,
and everybody was just having a blast. Like there were kids that were like you know 7-8 all the way up to like, I think I was seeing people like in their 60s, like it was a huge range of people going and having fun.
We got invited to host a panel Our very first panel.
Yeah, and don't kill me for saying this, but it was also kind of last minute. It was one of those things that wasn't planned.
No, it wasn't planned.
It was funny. I woke up on Saturday morning into a text from Claudius. I'm like, hey, you want to host a panel? I'm like, what?
That was your response? Really?
Yeah, I was like, okay. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's too early to be doing this.
Dude, because you seem real chill through messages. You're like, yeah, it's cool. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, we just kind of like jumped into
it. What was I going to do? I was going to say, no, we can't do it. No.
Yeah.
It was cool.
No, because I've always wanted to host a panel and like, you know, like my panel vision was like maybe during our panel, but I'm glad Preston was like nice enough to say like someone dropped out and he's like, hey, you guys are really good for when you interviewed me on your podcast and I know you'll be good on the mic.
It was the host of Nick Arcade, Phil Moore.
Yeah.
He was a very, very energetic.
Yeah. Very cool guy.
So we tried to get video, but I don't think we're going to be able to use any of it because we framed it thinking he'd be like sitting down most of the time talking to us. It was hilarious because like he was late to the panel because they didn't have a sign up for the room.
Dude, that's right.
So he showed up about 5 minutes late and he was like, the heck, he was like yelling, like trying to get people in the room.
We were all trying to get people in the room,
right? We had like a pretty decent crowd in there, but it was just like hilarious. And but he was like up and down talking to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We had to talk about his personal life a little bit, got to talk about how he got started in the industry. He got a big, huge compliment from a television legend. So, and you'll hear about that in the podcast. Yeah.
I will say a disclaimer before we kick like say more and then go into the recording. It was like last minute recording because not anyone's fault, but I guess we misunderstood going into the panel, wondering if it would be recorded at the convention and it wasn't. So just so you know, it's on an iPhone 12 Pro memo recorder. So I will do my best to clean it up, make it sound like it's something you can enjoy and listen to, but please be very forgiving.
It was hilarious because we were doing our research first thing in the morning when we got there. We were like trying to figure out questions we could ask. We weren't really sure like, okay, how much is the audience going to be able to do stuff?
Exactly.
So it's not our traditional polished, but I think it really shines and it's going to definitely speak to the character that Phil is.
I feel like when you listen to the audio, you will probably hopefully feel that you were there because it has like a nice like ambiance to it and you can hear the sounds in the background. You can hear Phil like not being so close to the mic where you can still hear what he's saying. You can hear our questions and stuff like that. So not like a super duper produced interview or panel, but we did what we could and it was a fun experience. I think that's the most important part. He had fun. We had fun.
Mm-hmm.
He's even nice enough to like thank us for doing a good job. And it was very last minute too. So like we had to like, you know, plan our day according to like fulfilling this thing that we wanted to do. And Preston was nice enough to allow us to do, which thank you again for letting us do that and still make something good and cool out of it to share with you. So we'll let you guys check it out now and hopefully you enjoy it as much as we did. And we'll be right back.
Is that Fast and Furious?
Yep.
All right, here, like this microphone right here, you know what this microphone reminds me of? Anybody get this callback reference? Ready?
I'm coming for you. Rambo, the first Rambo.
Damn it, how did I forget about that? I used to love Rambo, too.
And it zooms in, just his hand on the mic. He just does that.
I'm coming for you.
So who does he say that to? And why is he holding the mic?
He's talking to the sheriff dude that was jacking him. No, oh, not so the sheriff dude.
Press conference.
The press conference, yeah. Oh. No, it's not a press conference. It's that dude, he's like on a speaker in the radio room.
Oh.
And he's telling the
guy. I need to watch Rambo
again. I'm coming for you.
Dude, I need to watch Rambo again.
You need to watch Rambo.
I need to watch all five Rambos.
It's been a long time.
All six Rambos.
No! Just the first two, the rest
just
don't count.
Just the first Rambo.
Alright, nobody comes. Do we cancel this?
Anyone outside, if you want to come to a cool panel.
There's no sign out there saying
walk through those doors.
Like, there's nothing out there saying, like, people would know. It doesn't even say Wilton at the top.
It doesn't say anything.
Just beside the door.
But why isn't there a sign saying, hey?
We know people can't read.
I'm
going
to
let them know.
Because I, look, the reason why I wasn't here right away is because I couldn't find it.
Because you was doing stuff.
No. I was looking.
No,
I walked, I lapped the joint.
Oh, really? Yeah, see?
It seems to be a problem that
it's
my panel's supposed to be.
When I can't find it, and I've been here for 2 days.
What the heck? So we can drop F-bombs in this panel, right?
Yeah, you don't know me. I swear.
No, I'm not gonna do that.
Welcome to the panel.
Hey, everyone.
We're gonna start out first with a little smooth jazz. And the smooth jazz, then we're gonna talk about my early days.
Yeah,
before
yeah.
The big times. When Nickelodeon, before Nickelodeon became an orange blimp.
Can we say Nickelodeon?
Before Nickelodeon became an orange blimp, it was a purple tadpole.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh no. You wanna know some real inside
I want
stuff?
Some real stuff.
Here's some real inside
you
stuff.
You guys came to the right panel.
Come on in. It's like there's no sign. I'm telling you, this is the worst setup.
We need to let
nobody knows.
They don't. Do you wanna wave people in?
Like there's no banner? Wilton at the top.
Let's go. Let's go get him. Right.
I'll stay there and be dormant. Come on, stop. Look, we got people here. People I know. They already know me. This will be the up close and personal panel. All right, let's get started. I don't care. Let's get started. Okay. People walk in, we're in the middle of talking. You should have been here. No, I can't even blame the people because I couldn't find it. I just got here like 2 minutes, a second before you because I couldn't find it. I'm looking for Wilton. I see Salon 2. I see nothing to say Wilton. I can't even see like Wilton.
They're trying to sabotage our panels.
Where's my pretty face?
And we have to share a mic. It's really awkward.
Yeah.
No, yeah. You two use
the
mic.
No, you're fine.
No, we're good.
You're the one people want to hear, not us. All right,
go ahead. We're here to ask you dumb questions.
All right, I'm going to get this panel. I'm going to start.
Let's do it. All right.
Dearly beloved, we're gathered here today to get to this thing called Nick.
Let's go crazy.
Yeah. If you don't like doo-doo-ding, we're living in doo-doo-ding. Take a look around doo-doo-ding. Please, you got your friends.
Yeah. Don't let me
do it. You like Spider-Man. Yeah, I mean,
all right, let's set it off, man. It's just us. So, intimate room. That means that everything.
You guys want to gather around to like the fireplace?
You can ask me. I'll talk about things I'm not supposed to talk about.
Yay!
It's just
good. Yeah, really. That's good.
Okay. I'm Claudius. This is.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And you know this gentleman.
You're really Claudius?
I am, yeah, Claudius.
Claudius.
Dude, I met you earlier.
I just, you know, it reminds me of that movie, That Thing You Do, when he goes, I am Spartacus. That's what it reminds me of. You always see The Thing You Do?
I was going for that, but I didn't get it. I didn't get that.
Spartacus.
All right, Claudius.
Okay.
And right. I'm Acrilius.
Yes. I will pass the mic to my colleague here when it's time.
All right.
I'm still in the show. No, I'm just kidding. So we have a few questions for Phil we're going to ask, and then he's going to turn the mics to you guys, right? Is this correct?
Yeah, we'll do whatever. And I'm going to walk around.
And then we'll do whatever.
Too intimate to sit down in.
So,
so formal. I'm going to do the Commander Riker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, the Riker.
This is amazing, actually.
Doing the Riker today. Come on.
All right.
These guys promise to have cutting edge questions.
Yes.
Bring it, Claudius and
Chris. Dude, we're gonna start off being really, really simple and get it. Hey, come in, you guys.
Come on in.
All right, here we go. First question for you.
Yes.
It's like you're on a game show. This is crazy.
Hands on buzzers.
All right. Okay. So we know you got your start doing stand up, as we can see. You're a very funny guy. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about your most memorable moment from that time in your life?
Doing stand up?
Yeah.
The most memorable moment when I did stand up was when my son was born. Oh. Because, like, I've heard you comedians say all the time, once you have a kid, you got yourself like at least 30 minutes of brand new material. And so, you know, I was kind of like in the midst of like trying to do it. I was still doing emceeing. I wasn't doing open mic nights, but I would be like the opening act. Like they have the opening act, the middle act. The opening act has to go up and do like 5 minutes and then comes in between the other two. You have your opening act, you have your featured guy or girl who's supposed to be doing like a half an hour, and then you have the headliner that's paid to do these 45 minutes to an hour or more. Okay, so I was just doing that, and I gotten to the point where I was almost ready to be featured, but like my thing was, if I wrote a bit that was really good and better than my worst bit, I would always remove my worst bit. And so it was like other comics would look at me and go, dude, how come you are always stuck at like 12 minutes, you know? It's like, I'd come in with another new bit and go, okay, this other one had kind of sucked, that one can go. So I was always at this point of like 12 minutes. I was stuck in being the opening act guy. But once I became a dad, oh, the floodgates, it was like 12 to 30 minutes of new material just because I got someone pregnant. So that was, I remember that. I remember because I was in the middle of doing a show in West Palm Beach, Florida at a club called Funny Bones. And a friend of mine called Aaron's dad and mom, called me and said, we're taking your wife to the hospital. And I'd already talked to the club. They knew they had somebody on standby to fill in. And I drove, it was only like about maybe an hour, 15 minute drive to get back. I drove back, did the bit, and I mean, I did the bit.
I mean, yeah,
I'm at the microphone. What's your name, little kid? The baby was born, and you know, the flood of emotions, whatever. And in my mind, my comedic mind, in this midst of this wonderful moment that was like life changing, in my mind, I'm writing bits. I'm in my head, I'm going, look at that. And the first bit that at the time, I'm going to kind of spoil the punchline. But for those of you who may not remember because you're too young, over here too, there was a commercial they used to do with the California Raisins.
I remember, you know, those.
Remember those?
Okay. Yeah.
The little commercial was like claymation thing. Mm-hmm. So the very first thing, like when I got back, my wife was still in the hospital. She was going to, so I had to go back and finish the last night at the club. So I drove back and one wrote up and guy said, listen, I went there yesterday because I became a dad. And it went, yay! I said, I'm so excited. I became a dad. And everyone was like, yay! First line, first word I ever wrote was, my wife is upset because now she wants a kid. And that was and then it went from there. And then I talked a bit about, how we did the Le Mans thing, and they practice, you know, the pushing out and the breathing and all that stuff, and they show you actual footage of births. But the thing is, every video I saw was like of a little white baby being born. And when black kid was born, he came out purple, like he was a California race. So it was like, that was like the first two things I said when I walked back on stage for the first time was, I'm a dad, but now my wife wants a kid, and my kids look, and I did the California, the great, I did the whole thing. The whole thing. So.
What an amazing answer, like seriously.
It's the truth. That's awesome. True. And because everything else is just a bit. Like, you know, you come up with ideas, and you know, you have someone which you bring the house down. There's some bits where, depending on the venue, you know, sometimes get a standing ovation, but that, they all seemed like within the same vein. You know what I'm saying? Right. No matter what I was talking about, it's always tell the joke, get the reaction, hopefully you can get it long elongated with extra laughter. But the idea of like, something changed my life and I was able to go up and talk about it and people applauded. That never, like nothing else ever really changed my life. I was just writing bits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but something changed my life. I was never the same again. And I was able to go up and write something about it. And so that's why. That's my answer.
Were the other kids as influential or no?
No. Get out of here. Yeah, bro. Look, I became a granddad, and my stepdaughter had this beautiful little baby born on my birthday. Not only born on my birthday, birthday's August 24th. She's born on my birthday, but not only was she born on August 24th, but she was born at 8:24 a.m. So like, you know, I get like, yeah, I know, isn't it? It's double, right? I looked at my son Dave and I'm like, okay, when you have a kid, I'm sorry, your kid's playing with the sticks. I don't know. I'm gonna buy her Barbie dream house. But like, your kid, yeah, all the money's gone over there. Here's a bag of glass. I don't know. Uh-oh, hold on. Speaking of David, my son calling right now.
That is the best.
Hey, David, we were just talking about you in the middle of my panel. How you doing?
Hey, David.
Hey, David.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a panel right now. Say hi. Everybody say hi, David.
Hi, David.
There you go.
David, say hi back.
I started not to answer the phone, but I'm like, doggone it, it's an intimate crowd here. We know each other personally. But listen, just send me a text because I am in the middle of a panel, but I wanted to answer because I thought it'd be funny.
It is very funny.
All right, love you, bye.
Is David the one that you just talked about?
About giving this
yeah,
kid
okay.
a bag of glass?
Oh, yeah. Okay, David is the guy. Makes sense.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Was there ever a time when a joke didn't land, and how did you save it or workshop it?
Oh, dude, like, when I started out, look, as much as, like, look, David's mom and I are no longer together, but if I have to say something good about her, it was because after my first night of trying stand-up at an open mic night, she said, you got to go and try again, because everything bombed. Like, everything. It was like, please welcome to the stage the guy who beats puppies. And I walked out because they hated everything that came out of my mouth. I mean, it was the biggest. And I got off the stage and went, well, that was fun to try. And she's like, no, you have to try it again. I'm like, no. Yeah, it bombed bad, man. I can't even tell you what I talked about. I just remember, but here's why. Okay, she actually told me why it bombed, and she's absolutely right. Because here's what they did. And it was like one of these places that wanted to have, hey, how you doing, man? We're talking about me bombing as a comedian. Welcome to the bar.
Welcome to the panel. We
thought
a little live.
So here's what happened. So instead of it being a regular comedy club, it was at a nightclub. Because back in like the 80s, everybody wanted to have their comedy night. If you had a microphone and a plastic stage and a wall, everybody wanted to have a comedy night. So here's what they did. Club is jumping, the lights are going, music's going, people are dancing, people are drinking. And then somebody said,
all right, everybody, I want you to clear the middle of the floor, please. Clear the floor, clear the floor. All right, you people having a good time? Yay! JJ Whispers, the best club in Orlando. Yay! You ready to get your drink on? Yay! Well, hold up. We got some amateur comedians coming up. Here we go.
And they do.
Nobody can win that.
That was how they... And here we are, a bunch of newbies like, oh, here we go, here we go, here we go. And, yeah, that was horribly bombed. Nothing worked. Nothing worked. Like I said, they greeted me like I was a seal poacher or something. Bad. Bad.
Well, at least you kept trying.
Yeah, well, you know, but like I said, the one really good thing I can say about my ex.
So who are some of your comedic inspirations?
You know, that's a very good question. I've been asked it before.
Oh.
But we got this thing where I said, like, I really get ooh and ah when I get interviewed a lot, especially during pandemic, everybody had a podcast. So I get kind of goosebumpy when somebody asks me a question that I have not been asked. So that was his goal. But that is a very good question because I don't get asked it that much. Okay, so you asked me who my influences.
Yeah,
okay. So there's kind of an interesting story behind it. It's not what you think, okay? As you can see, I'm the Ritalin poster child. I always have been, okay? So when I decided to start doing stand-up comedy, the first thing that people say, being a black man, is you go out there and you do like Richard Pryor. You go out there and you do like Eddie Murphy. You go out there and, but that's not me. You know, I'm like, I'm the happy Huxtable, you know? I'm like, I'm one step short of being Carlton Banks. That's not me. And so it was hard for me, even though we played all of those other comedians and stuff in the house, you know, my mom had Richard Pryor's album with all the cussing and all the everything, and we laughed about it all day long, yeah. But it wasn't who I am. So it was interesting trying to figure out who to identify with as I looked to try to become a comedian. So instead of looking at, like most people said, looking at people who are my same race, I began to gravitate to people who were my same energy. And those people were, think back to like the 80s, young stand-up comic Steve Martin.
Yeah.
With his
yeah.
wild and crazy eyes.
Yeah.
Take a look at people like Howie Mandel yeah. with the rubber glove on the head and popping off like that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You look at guys like that. You look at guys like Gallagher, even though wasn't a prop comic,
yeah.
you know? Bobcat Goldthwait. Sam Kinison. You know?
Yeah.
These are guys, so instead of trying to like take a look and be inspired by somebody that would cause me to be inauthentic or disingenuous, maybe that's the best word. I looked at people who acted like me, because no matter what, look, I don't think I have to convince anybody that I'm black. But what I have to convince some people is that I'm funny in the skin. And so I wanted to model myself with the people who had my energy and who had my sort of mindset when they did comedy. It didn't matter if you were funny. I mean, it didn't matter if you were clean or dirty. All you had to do was, because I was thinking, who's going to, I'm going to go up there on stage. I'm going to walk back and forth. I'm going to bounce around. I'm going to be loud. And I'm going to, like, you know, who does that? And then, but Howie Mandel, Steve Martin. Oh, and Robin Williams. I mean, how can we forget Robin Williams? Robin Williams. So those are the people. And I have to say this, because sometimes I'm at places and, like, people are like, hey, man, how come you like no brothers? But that's why. Because it was only because I'm trying to find people that were authentically Phil.
Right. Which makes sense.
And that's what I did.
That's great, nice. Actually. Awesome answer. So how's it working on Reading Rainbow? No, I'm just kidding. No. That was a shot. Like, on his Instagram, you should follow him on Instagram, by the way. When he was hosting his first show on TV, earlier show.
You can say the name of the show.
Okay.
I can't.
Okay. When he was hosting the kids, Nickelodeon Arcade, the Kids Arcade show on
Nick Arcade.
There you go. Sorry.
Wow, he's done his homework.
Yeah. Anyway, could you tell us the story again live here? Okay. What that was for you?
Yes.
And you will hear LeVar Burton.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So if you go to my Instagram, I pinned this. It's the actual thing that happened. So back in the time that I was doing that show, I would get people that would come up all the time and go, oh my gosh, like, we really love you. We watch you all the time. That thing, that Reading Rainbow show you do. And I was like, no, that's a barber, but I get it. Okay. You remember, you got that fade, no mustache, you know, skinnier Phil. And then later on, it became like, oh my gosh, so why did you stop doing Star Trek to do this? So I'm like, still, it's a different show, but still not that guy. So, and it happened so much that I went to the art department. And I said, listen, when we take the next episode, and I cleared it with the executives. I said, when we take the show, I'd like for you to make me a visor like Jordy LaForge. And I already, being a nerd, I already had like the communicator pen. I owned several. I had some that chirped and some that didn't. Don't judge.
That's really awesome.
And so I had the badge already. And I wrote, and they let me write the line for the announcer, Andrea Lively. And what she said, normally it's like, she would always say something clever, like, you know, like, here's your host, a guy who shows up late for the class, but never late to play games, Fillmore. It was always something like that.
Right.
So for this one, she goes, and now, here's your host. And no, he's not that guy on Star Trek The Next Generation, but he is Fillmore. And when I came out with the visor on, and that.
That's really why it's
not so, it's never offensive. And then the follow-up to the story.
Oh, cool.
My son David now works in entertainment. He works primarily in film.
That's awesome.
And he actually had the opportunity to work with LeVar Burton on the shoot.
Sweet.
And he told LeVar the story. So then you fast forward like a couple of years later, and my son and I are doing our thing that we do. We're nerds, we go to conventions.
That's cool.
And Star Trek people are there. And so he goes over, and this is my first time meeting LeVar. And you know, he said, this is my dad, the one I told you the story about. I knew you told him the story, and we kind of laughed about it. So then when we got ready to go, LeVar is standing right here. I'm standing right here. And he goes, okay, well, listen, he talks to everybody. He's like, we got to go. And he grabs LeVar and goes, let's go, Dad. And he grabs LeVar.
That's so
that
was
so.
Amazing.
And LeVar was right in on it. He's like, all right, let's go.
Yeah, awesome.
And I was like, I see what you guys did.
Yeah.
I see what you guys did.
All right. Talking about Nick Arcade, how did you get that job?
Okay. Now, the reason why I did that big sigh is the story of getting the show is really boring because it's just an audition. Like, I'm not even going to, like, dance around. It's just an audition. You know, your agent calls and go, hey, we got an audition for a game show. You interested? Yeah, sure. I got a mortgage, sure.
Right.
All right, so be at this place. We'll fax you the size. They faxed me the size. Isn't that quaint? And they faxed me the lines. And so I'm like, okay, new game show, Nickelodeon. And you just go and you do the audition. People standing behind us, sitting behind the table like that.
camera back there. You walk up, state your name.
It's called a slate.
Hi, my name is Phil Moore, and I'm with the Hurt Garver Talent Agency, and I'm reading for the part of host for Nick Arcade. And then you just do the thing. Boring story.
Boring story. What's a better story is what made me audition. Would you like to hear that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so here's the deal. When David was born, my son was born, I didn't want to be on the road any longer. I'm now a dad. Don't want to be away from my wife. Don't want to be away from my son. So, what's up going on out there? Let's go do that. Come on.
Okay. Yeah.
Come on, everybody.
So, I didn't want to be on the road. And at the time, they had just built Universal Studios Florida, and they had just built the Disney MGM Studios adjacent to Disney World. And they were going to be actual working sound stages. They were trying to become Hollywood East. That was a big thing in Orlando. Shows were going to come down, they want to start shooting regularly. Of all the different shows that I did, I ended up being the audience warm-up for several. Remote Control, which was showing MTV. Win, Lose, or Draw, which was a game show that was on. The Mickey Mouse Club with Justin and Brittany. I was the audience warm-up for the Mickey Mouse Club. And I also was the audience warm-up for a show called Let's Make a Deal. Not the Wayne Brady one. We had a guy named Tom Hilton. And then every now and then, the actual guy that created the show started, Monty Hall, would be there. So I actually got to work with the legend, Monty Hall. So my job was warm-up. This is the biggest sound stage on the lot. 900 seats. They bring people from the park. So think about it. Every day we tape. Somebody's job was to gather 9 people who spent $5 million to bring their family to Disney World and go, you want to go sit in the soundstage and watch a game show? And then we did it. It would fill the place. Let's make a deal. We're familiar with the show. I'm doing my stuff, okay? Doing my thing. Boom, boom, boom. And it was time. Like, I knew the bits to do. I knew how to pace it. When you get to the big deal, show's about over. You get to the big deal, I'm just waiting for the big deal to be won or lost, and then I tell the people, thank you for coming, enjoy the rest of your day out at Disney, take care. Right before the big deal started, the stage manager comes to me and he goes, Phil, we need you to stretch. I'm like, why? He goes, remember that last song that we had? Yeah, the elephant? Yeah, he just took a big dump back on the floor. We have an elephant-sized dump. We gotta clean it, and we gotta disinfect it, and quite honestly, we weren't prepared to deal with that stuff.
What?
So oh, we need you God. To stretch. We don't want the 900 people to get antsy. We don't want them to leave. We want you to keep them entertained while we take care of this.
Oh my gosh.
Okay? So, crazy. The show was on syndication, and it was through NBC. And it was a co-production with Dick Clark Entertainment, the legend Mr. Dick Clark. He would pop in every now and then, but I never saw him. As the lowly audience warm-up guy, I just show up 30 minutes before they load in the audience, do my bit, and when the audience is done, I sort of leave with them. I'm not involved in anything else. I'm not a producer. I'm not even a PA. Where's the PA? Audience warm-up is worse than a PA. Get in and get out, and please, only take one bag of chips from Kraft Services.
It's the warm-up guy.
And so
the family size bag?
Yeah, huh?
Family size bag or just
No, the little teeny one. The ones that you put in your kids' lunch
like little
box.
Subway bags. Oh, okay.
They're counting it as I leave.
Oh, all right.
So I'm out there and I'm like, I gotta stretch. And this is where stand-up comedy comes in. Along my back to doing stand-up on the road, I had the opportunity to work with the late great Richard Jenny, who is the best improvisational comic I've ever seen. A lot of you may not know him, but if you watched the movie Jingle All the Way, he's Arnold Schwarzenegger's buddy at work. Okay, so weird little reference, but that's the only thing I think that most people would know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you've ever seen Jingle All the Way, he's Arnold's buddy at work. Okay, but the guy is a stand-up comic. And the reason why I say that about Richard is I actually opened for him, and I remember he was in, we were in Boca Raton, Florida. They brought me in to be the MC and opening act. And I remember he's like, hey, Phil, you want to come out, hang out? We're going to go get some horses, maybe go on the boat. I'm like, sure, man, you got the money, let's do it. And we hung out all day and we just had fun. And I'd already seen his act on Friday night. We hung out Saturday afternoon. And when he went up on stage, the guy did a standing ovation killer set about what we did that day.
Wow.
Like, I'm busy trying to write bits over a week to fill another 2 or 3 minutes. And this guy was able to go up and improv.
an entire hour set. And I knew it was improv because we just did it. And so I started talking to him about that. Like, man, how'd you do that? And he didn't, and I was always timid to try it. So now here I am now. I've got like 900 people. Elders in poop. I gotta fill it. And I stopped and went, okay, Phil, it's time to use your Jedi improv powers. And I just started doing what I'm doing right now. I just started talking to people. Not doing any bits, not doing any routines, not relying on the stuff that I wrote and that was practiced. I just started talking to the people. And the next thing I know, the stage manager, after about 17 minutes, goes, okay, Phil, we're ready to roll. And I went, hey, we're ready to go. And everybody applauded. I didn't realize the time had gone by that quickly. And then he goes, Phil, come here. And he goes, before we get rolling, Mr. Clark would like to thank the crowd for being so patient. I went, with a who to what? He goes, Dick Clark. And he pointed over, and there's Dick Clark. Like this is Dick Clark, and this is me.
Hey, Dick Clark.
And I'm about to freak out. I'm like, it's Dick Clark. And he goes, he said, do a little intro. And I'm like, do a little intro? I'm trying not to wet my pants. But I do a nice little intro. Da 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 da. The one, the only, the legendary, Mr. Dick Clark. He comes out, takes the microphone, and then I start to walk away. I hand him the mic, they bring the spotlight on, and he grabs my arm. And he goes, ladies and gentlemen, before we go here, normally when something like this happens in a taping, it's normally disastrous for us in a control room. We are all like trying not to freak out, and we're all just trying to stay sane. I've got to say, I've never had as much fun in a disaster as I had watching this young man. Please give Fillmore a big hand. And I was like,
oh, that's so cool.
Oh, that is a great compliment. Yeah.
That's awesome. Heck yeah.
And when I went home, I called my agent, I told her that story, and I said, I want to be on TV. And she goes, oh, really? I said, if Dick Clark gives you a pat on the back, then maybe I'm selling myself short just doing stand-up. Maybe I should be trying for something else. Mm-hmm. So that's why I went out for the audition for Nick Arcade.
That was amazing. Hard to believe that a show that I loved so much watching as a kid all came about because...
Right, and listen, life lesson, folks, when things go crazy, and things get crappy, and it stinks to high heaven like it's a big pile of elephant dung,
literally
you never
crappy.
Know if that's going to be the thing that leads you to your life-changing breakthrough.
Yes!
There you go.
Inspirational message for us.
There we go. All based off of Putin.
Right. So Nick Arcade in season 2 had crossovers with other celebrity guests from other shows on the network.
You can say that I can't. You strike, ladies and gentlemen. It's a strike going on, so I can't really talk about X, Y, and Z. But you can. You're not in the union. Go ahead and say it.
I know. They had other Nick shows then. Were there any moments that you really enjoyed with celebrities or any favorite moments?
Nope.
Hey, be truthful.
No, they were, I tell you what, Michael Ray Bauer played Donkey Lips on Salute Your Shorts. Michael Ray Bauer was super fun because Michael Ray Bauer was a fanboy. Like, he wasn't just like, hey, we got booked to do this show. He's an alumni on another show. And all he was like me with Dick Clark, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so when he came on the show, he already is known for his role on Salute Your Shorts as having a lisp and kind of stuttering. The dude was just like Michael, you're sweating. Did you all right? Yeah, I'm all right. You know, he really was like, we're friends. We just did a thing at Comic-Con in San Diego this past Thursday night. And he and I were there together doing an event that they wanted a bunch of 90s people there. So with some people there from all that, I was there. It was great. And so we still see each other to this day. But I just remember, he was such a fanboy. Like all he wanted to do was just stare there. And he reminded me, I remember SNL, Chris Farley, and he's like with Paul McCartney. That's how he was. Dude, you do a show about video games. Yeah. That's awesome. So, Michael was the best. He just made me chuckle. I got a joy just kind of being around him.
Thank you. So, what's it like being a challenge producer for Mr. Beast and Celebrity Game?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, what I do now for a living is I am what's called a challenge producer. That means if you watch a show where there's games on it,
I make the games up, you know? And so, yeah, because I do it, yeah. And last year, I spent the entire summer in North Carolina as a producer for Mr. Beast, the Mr. Beast. And I gotta tell you, you really wanna know?
Yeah, please.
It is a nightmare. There's no punch. There's no punchline there. There is no one gonna come back with something witty and clever. It is, okay, Jimmy himself, Jimmy, Mr. Beast, awesome, thumbs up, 100%. If your kid's watching, let them keep on, because Jimmy, the person, is an incredibly giving person. He's just, his heart is bigger than what he's able to actually do, and yet still he's able to do.
Yes.
But the clowns that run the company? Oh my gosh. Oh, I've been in this business for 30 years, and I've never worked with a bigger barrel of monkeys than the people who are in charge. Is this being recorded? The people who run Mr. Beast Company are idiots, but Jimmy is wonderful. Oh my gosh. It was like, look, let me tell you how bad it is, okay? They pay really, really ridiculously well, okay? I work with people who are like in their 20s, who were there making the same money as me. 30-year career, a 27-year-old, like his third or fourth job, and none of us want to go back! It's like, it was like, when the time was up, do you want to renew your card? No, I don't! I want to eat government cheese and be on welfare before I work here. The strike is better than the idiots that run. It's, oh!
So it's a good time.
Okay. The producers are all cool people. The cast, cool people. Jimmy is golden. But man, why does he have the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stooges running the company? It's like, I'm trying to have a conversation with a penguin. When I just, here's why we talked to so-and-so, and here's what we need to do. I don't think we can do it, you get your dog food. And it's like, really? We gotta get something done here. Anyway. That's my honest answer.
I like the honesty. Thank you for that. We love the honesty.
That's why I'm here. I'm here instead of working there in this job that paid me more in 6 months than I made the entire year before. And I never
All right, so before we open it up to audience questions, we got one more final question. What can you tell us
about?
Yeah?
I'm looking at your phone.
Yes.
Yeah? You have several questions there.
Yes.
Yeah. Make it a good one.
Okay, well, we're going to give you the option. No, I'm just kidding. What can you tell us about the show that you're currently working on that's filming in Spain?
Oh, okay, cool. So right now I am a producer of a new show. It's going to be on CBS. It's called Loterita Loca, and it's based off of the Mexican game Loterita. And it's kind of like bingo. And it's going to be on CBS. It's one of those big primetime shows. So it'll be on in the evening. And we're bringing people from all around the United States together, and they're going to have a chance to compete to win $1 million. And, you know, the strike is going on right now. We're doing pre-production stuff. But the network owns several studio spaces in other countries. So when it comes time to shoot the show, we're going to fly to Madrid, shoot the episodes. We're flying over all the customers, I mean, all of the contestants too. So we're flying over all of the contestants, because they're all coming from here. We're just going to shoot it there because it's within the legal grounds with respect to the unions to shoot the show. So we're doing pre-production here. So this fall on CBS, look for Loterita Loca. It's a game show that is almost like watching Telemundo. I've never seen a game. You know how Jimmy Fallon has the roots as the band?
Yeah, I love that.
We've got a game show in which our house band is Sheila E. and her band.
Oh, that's dope. Oh, nice.
Sheila E. and her band are the house band. And when Sheila E. is jamming in between commercial breaks, we've got dancers that'll be there doing the thing in the full regalia, too.
Sounds like a whole party every night.
It's going to be hosted by Jaime Camel, who is the voice of the dad in Coco. He was on Jane the Virgin. He is known as the Mexican George Clooney.
Okay.
Ooh.
Jaime Camel.
Good looking dude. Good looking dude. Right. Jaime Camel. That will be this fall on CBS.
Sweet. Okay.
So I leave to fly to Spain on 7th of August, something like that. Ready to go.
Such a show off.
You need some hiking, we'll be there, we'll help you.
If you need some people
if any,
to...
Drew's got the gig. Okay.
You need someone to get your coffee. I have another question, but I want to turn to you guys if you guys have questions.
Because
we've
been asking questions for me? We've been chitting and chatting. Nobody's got... Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go bring it.
First of all, thanks for existing. I'm a game show junkie.
That's so nice.
Aw. Oh, yeah, Come on, everyone.
There's group hugs going on. We can all feel the love. Can you guys feel the love outside? No one?
All right. Don't give him ideas.
Yes, I'll tell him what he'll do.
You should go hug someone outside.
Sit down. You two get nothing.
Yeah, those are guys need hugs too.
All right, your question.
So my question has to be cut because I watched all of them, but I will tell you, my name is Andrea, so you can guess what show was most special.
Hey, Andrea,
to me.
Where's Mikey headed today?
I was always wondering. So my question's a really illegal question.
Sure.
You know all the other hosts.
Uh-huh.
If you had to put all of them to compete on a game show, which one would you bet your money on would win the challenge?
Would win the challenge?
Yeah.
Me.
You. If you put him in the final, you don't get to, you're hosting. The rest of them ascend into the finals.
Oh.
Yeah, because it's too
good. Oh, that's easy too. Summer Sanders. She's an Olympian. By the way, listen, this segue off of your question.
Yes.
So, unfortunately, we only got 2 seasons. We didn't get a third, but we were working on a third. And one of the things that I pitched for a third season that was greenlit, had we gotten picked up, was what I called Battle of the Game Show Hosts.
Oh,
so I would host Nick Arcade, and it would be Michael Malley and Summer Sanders versus Kurt Fogg and Mark Summers.
Oh my gosh.
So we all,
you would have just blown up
all 5 of us would have been together in one room on one show.
They robbed us.
Did rob us. Jeez.
I pitched the idea. I talked to all the other hosts. They were all down to do it. And so we started to have Summers versus the others. We have Summer Sanders and Mark Summers, and Kurt Fogg and Michael Malley. That was called like Summers versus the others. But the idea was to get all 5 of us. We were the big 5 game shows back in the 90s, and that was the idea, to get us all on one show together. And that never happened.
What a bummer.
Yeah. Okay, wait. I was going to tell you a little secret. If you're ever playing trivia against people, you want to make some real money. Remember the show Guts?
Yeah.
Okay, little secret here. Most people don't know this. I know because I was there, okay? I walked in the office one time, and the executive producer of the show, and there was a sippy bottle that, you know, was like merch that they were going to put out.
Yes.
And I stopped and went, dude, how come there are periods in between the letters? He goes, oh, when we first developed the show, Guts was an acronym. And they decided to drop the acronym. Mm-hmm. But he said, but like the first 7 months of development, everything had G period, U period, T period, S periods. Would you like to know what it stood for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Get up to speed.
Oh!
That's pretty cool.
There we go. Most people don't know it. You would win that trivia question.
Sure.
There we go.
Yeah.
Get up to speed. The show was that Guts was going to be here. Get up to speed.
Yeah. Anyone else have any questions?
How did you go from host to challenge producer?
Do you know what? It's a sad story. Divorce and 9/11. I got divorced the same year 9/11 happened. I shut down. The world shut down. And, it was almost like the strike, but not really strike. But, there was no work going on. No work was going on.
Yeah. You know, the industry was looking at itself, reevaluating what they were doing, and we all, everything just shut down. And then when it was time to get back up to work, it was like, my agent said this, I was with ICM, which is like a big, yeah, William Morris, CAA, and ICM. They're like monster agents. You with one of them, you're gonna be working. And I was with ICM, but she actually said, and it made sense, she goes, well, I just signed you like 2 years ago, but I've got clients that I've had for years. So now that we're trying to get back to work, I've got to kind of cater to the people that I've been with for years, which makes sense, don't get me wrong. Like if I was with somebody for like 7 or 8 years and somebody just signed last year, you better be trying to find me a job, you know, because I made you money, we've got, you know.
Yeah.
So I understood that. But with that said, it was like, I gotta eat, I have to pay bills. And so a friend of mine who was a former Nickelodeon executive producer was working on a TV show on Fox, and he gave me a call and said, Phil, I want you to see if you can kind of help coach our host. And I'm like, okay, are you paying? And he's like, yeah. So I went out there and realized I can't really coach this guy. But I said, you guys use a teleprompter, right? He goes, yeah. I said, well, let me start like thinking of what I would say. So we started like, and the way we did this was, they would have a dress rehearsal and for camera blocking, like where the cameras need to be to get the shots right. And when you have that camera blocking run through, you must shoot the show the exact same way. Don't decide to step over here because the camera is now ready to zoom in on you over there. So whatever you do during the run through is what you have to do during the taping. So I would watch the taping and I would like write what I would say if I were hosting the show. So I was sort of like a Cyrano de Bergerac. I would watch the show and I would write what I would say and then we'd feed it into the prompter and the guy looked brilliant. And so I did that as writing for a while, and writing led into producing, and I did a bunch of like crazy producing. I worked for E, I worked for Style Network, I worked on Clean House with Niecy Nash and Matt Eisman. Yes. That's why I know them. Like people are like, how do you know so many people? Well, because they were stars and I was just the guy going, hey, we'll work for food, you know? But I worked on Clean House, I worked on How Do I Look, I worked on all those E specials where like, Top 10 crazy, child stars gone wild. And so I did a lot of that. But now, into challenge producing. Also owned by E! Entertainment and stuff was E! Entertainment, Bravo, Oxygen, all of them came under the banner. And with them was also the late, great G4. Mm-hmm. And I was desperately trying to get back to G4 because video games was my film war origin story, you know what I mean? And so when I got with, and I got with G4, it was just an elevator ride in the building, just go up two more floors. But when I started working for G4, they would do remote shoots and they always wanted their hosts to kind of do fun and crazy things. And I'm like, well, I'm a game show guy, you know? And I started coming up with fun things for the host to do. Like one time somebody built an actual giant, y'all gonna get mad at me. It's in the vehicle in Halo that Master Chief drives. They built a live one.
You know that.
And so they wanted to do fun stuff with the vehicle. So I started coming up with fun things and weird things to do with the vehicle as our host was riding along in. And so those kind of things, cool. Like, you know, they had the Batman live show that came to the Staples Center in LA. And it was like, okay, we want our host to do something crazy. We're gonna go backstage with the people doing the aerial stuff, like people were on wires and swinging. And so it was like, okay, what can I come up with? So it was like, I was coming up with stuff for them to do. And then I realized, man, this is fun. And I'm with G4, and I just fortunately managed to like get back into game shows. Game shows always been my love, but I had to pay the bills, you know? I had to pay the bills. And so I just took job, and that's how I got back into gaming and how I ended up being a challenger.
Sweet.
Nice.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
Any more questions?
Any?
For
any?
The audience?
Any? Chris, you about? Yes.
Is there, on Troll, that cut off your name, is there a specific moment that like stands out as like a favorite that you'll kind of always take with you?
Super
cool that happened? Or?
Yeah, but it's not anything you've ever seen on camera. It's kind of weird. Like, one of my favorite moments from that show is something that you never saw, but it became a part of the show.
Okay, so if you ever watch the show, I would make up goofy songs.
Yeah.
Music would play, you know, we're walking over here right now. Who's gonna win the game? You know, I would just make, and it was all ad lib. It was all just off the top of my head. I never knew who was gonna be going over to do it. A red team, blue team, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, so when it happened, I just responded in the moment. Well, the moment that I remember is, again, the origin story of that. So, here's what happened. One day, season one, if you ever watch the show in order, I'm not suggesting you do, but if you ever watch the show in order, the first four or five episodes, there's no singing of Fillmore. I don't sing. It was just the music, video challenge! Dun, 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 okay, I'm here with so-and-so, you know, that was it. Okay, so one day we had a technical foul. Something happened, and stage manager came to me and said, okay, listen, we're gonna, like, you know, be on a hold for a minute while the technician's telling whatever. And the audience warm-up guy started to go out and talk to the audience. Well, after a while, I was like, okay, this is taking a little bit longer than normal. I'll go talk to him. So I was actually, you know, studying my cards and making sure I had everything set. I didn't have a teleprompter, so I was going over stuff and make, you know. So I said, you know, it's taking a while. Let me go over and just, I'm sure the audience would like to talk to me. So I went out there and started talking to the audience. Now, someone in the control room thought, maybe we should help fill out. Maybe just him and the warm-up guy, Bob Brandenburg, maybe that's not enough. Maybe they need some music. So someone started playing the theme song in the arcade on infinite loop. It was like, dun, dun, bam, ba, dun, dun, dun. Hey, it's a song. And I'm with the audience and bring a couple little kids stand up. We're all having fun. Okay, so listen, let's talk about, like, hey, do you play sports? And we're not talking about, like, the video challenge walk music. We're talking about the 12-inch disco version of the song. Just like 17. Over and over and over. And I finally grabbed my microphone. I'm like, who in the world keeps playing a song over and over again? And they just kept it going. So, me and my smart aleckness, I decided that once we went back to shooting, the first time it was video challenge, I was going to kind of give it to the people in the control room. So I think the first thing I remember saying was something like, oh my gosh, it's a song again, but which one of these kids will win, you know? And so when we came back, I'm like, there's that music one more time, my check cleared, so I guess it's fine, you know? So I was really just kind of giving a big to the control room.
That's awesome.
That's what I was doing. And then, the next time somebody got a video challenge, I got my joke out and we went back to normal. Okay, Bobby, Susie, you get ready. And then next time we had a commercial break, the director came out and went, you fell. The little song thing you did. I said, yeah, I got you guys good, didn't I? Play the song all over again. Yeah. And you go, yeah, that's good. You like it.
That's funny.
Oh no. It backfired.
Could you do it again? Okay, yeah, but the next time we go out, like the next anytime you hear the song. Damn. I'm like, oh, challenge accepted. So that was the birth of the singing.
Oh, okay.
So you never saw why it happened. You only saw that now it's happened. And so that moment stands out for me because it was like you said, it kind of backfired. You know? I was trying to be a smart aleck. And got stuck doing a thing for like 87 episodes. So
that's a great question, by the way.
Yeah. Anybody else? Just us? Yes.
I know back in the day when watching the Nickelodeon game shows, he had stuff like Double Dare or Legend of Hidden Temple and stuff like that, where the host seemed kind of like an authority figure. Mm-hmm. It wasn't very cool. But Nick Arcade, you're always like singing and it's always fun. You weren't like...
I was the big kid. Okay, now I'm reluctant to tell this story.
Yeah.
Because it was a nice compliment that somebody gave me. And when I tell the story, it sounds like I'm patting myself on the back. But it's a true story and it fits what it is you're saying. So now, I'm a big grown-up man, I'm wearing my big boy pants, I'm a producer, and I'm friends with the guy that created the show.
Yeah.
And so one day we're out, we're in New York, we're having some pizza, that's where a couple of them live, And I'm like, guys, I'm out in LA. I'm doing the whole producer thing. There have been times when I had to look at people, casting contestants, I'm working with hosts. I always wonder, because I mean, I kind of go, what's going through my mind when I'm trying to make a decision of who to choose as a contestant or as a host? And I always wonder, what made you guys pick me? Was I brilliant? Was I the best ever? Was I all that in a bag of chips? And immediately, both of them almost simultaneously cut me off. Oh, no. It's like, what?
That's wild.
Hello, ego.
Yeah, right.
So I stopped and went, why'd you choose me? And so the story they told me, and it kind of goes to what you're saying, is that he said, when we were auditioning, we auditioned like over 200 people across the country. We narrowed it down. That's the callback. That's the boring stuff. You go back and do it again. You go back and do it again. That's why I said auditioning is just, blah. I just auditioned, you know? Mm. But when it came down to them, they narrowed it down to two people. I did one audition and six callbacks. This is my seventh time. Jeez. My seventh time. But now it's just down to two people. They brought us in separately. The set was still being built. So we were on the set of Get the Picture. And I tell people that because every now and then people will find one of the producers on the set of Get the Picture and go, hey, they did Nick Arcade before you. I'm like, no, silly. It's like a pilot. They were doing a test while they built the set. So we were on the set of Get the Picture, but we did pay some kids to come in and they were playing contestants. The only thing we didn't do were the video challenges because those sets weren't built. But, you know, I was still up there doing points, puzzles, pop quizzes, and prizes. And, you know, it was the whole deal. And so so the guys told me, James Bethea, Karim Metcalf, two guys that created the show, they said, here's the thing. The other guy was good. He was, like, real good. He was, like, New York City good, you know? You know what I'm saying? Wow. You know, like, New York City, he had that good grease on him. You know what I mean? And so everybody said, but he said, here's the thing. Every time we would break to change a battery, we would break to, you know, reset, we would break so that the kids could take a bathroom break. He was back at the podium and he was looking over his cards, going over his notes, so he'd be prepared to go do the next thing because we had no teleprompters. He says, but every time we stopped, when it was your audition, final audition, you would put down your cards and you'd go sit and talk and play with the kids. And he went, this guy likes kids and kids like him, so it's gonna come off as he's one of them. And that's why they chose me.
Wow.
Dude, that's cool.
And genuine works.
Yeah, heck yeah. It's badass.
I didn't even know. And that, again, another weird thing. I wish I could roll the videotape and show.
Yeah.
The thing I did here, this is what got me the job. No, the thing that got me the job is something you'll never see.
Yeah.
Something you'll never see. I won the gig when they stopped rolling. Isn't that weird?
That's insane. Yeah, to think about, yeah.
When they stop rolling cameras, yeah, that's what won me the gig.
So when you walk away tonight, remember, be yourself.
Be yourself.
And when it starts smelling like a bunch of poop, that's when
life's
going to hit
you. It could be a good thing.
It
could be a breakthrough right on the horizon. That's it.
Life lessons.
That's life lessons, yep. That's
any,
it.
Any more questions?
Anyone else? This has been fun.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, look, and because it's just us, as one story happened, you heard another one.
It is true. Anything. We have a minute left.
Oh, somebody asked me about how did I start? Yeah, when we were doing autographs, somebody asked me about how I got the gig with Remote Control. Remote Control was a game show on MTV hosted by the late great Ken Ober. It was also the place where Colin Quinn got his start, and Adam Sandler. Dennis Leary, they were all like big characters. We were all struggling. Like, we were seriously, we'll work for food, you know? And when I was doing stand up, this is before, my wife came pregnant, I was opening for these major, major artists. I mean, I was the opening act for people who are super famous now, but were up and coming back then. I was opening act for Jeff Foxworthy, Drew Carey, Sinbad, Dana Carvey, Jerry Seinfeld. I was like opening up for these guys. And I also opened in Long Island, New York at a small little club for Ken Ober, who was the host of Remote Control.
Now, I was like Michael Ray Bauer. I was a fan of that show. I watched that show regularly. And so when we got done, I was like, listen, I know people probably bug you all the time. I'm not going to ask you to put in a word for me. I'm not going to ask you to do that. I will do all the legwork. But I do know this business is about, like, there's gatekeepers and people you got to get past, the people you got to get past to get to the person. If you would just tell me that name, I will do all the work. I will be escorted and thrown out on Fifth Avenue in New York. But I will do all the work, and I'll never tell them you told me the name. I just need to know the name. So he said, you know, if you can get a chance to talk to blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, cool. And so I worked my butt off while I was still doing this little run for like 3 weeks in New York, opening for these different acts. And I managed to get a quick meeting. I got a letter in, and then like a couple days later in the letter, I was talking about I'm only gonna be in New York for whatever. Got a quick meeting with this person, and that was it. Wow. Now, go back to Florida. Studios are being built. Remember a story about the studios? Mm-hmm. And then my agent gives me a call and he goes, Phil, well, my manager, I didn't have any. Phil, what were you doing up in New York? So, nothing, you know, laughing for, you know, drunk people? What? And he goes, we got a phone call from MTV. They're doing some show there with, I don't know, MTV Spring Break. I'm like, oh yeah, MTV used to always do Spring Break. Mm. They would come to like Daytona Beach. He goes, well, yeah, they're going to be coming back Spring Break Daytona Beach, but this time they're going to be bringing their game show remote control. They're going to be shooting at this new studio that Disney's building, and they're trying to save money on bringing people down and trying to hire as many people as they can locally. And they wanted to know if you'd be interested in auditioning to be the audience foreman. And that's how I got into TV. The very first TV thing I ever did was doing the audience warm-up for MTV's remote control. Now, since these two studios were brand new and we had a good time and people seemed to like what I did, the next time another show, hey, we're doing Win, Lose, or Draw. Hey, we're doing America's Funniest Home Videos grand finale. Hey, we're doing, every time a show came through, it was like, well, who's that guy that you use? No, we're bringing in a new Mickey Mouse Club. All right, well, who's that guy? He's good with kids, right? Okay, you know, and so I was the local guy and my name sort of got out there as the go-to dude. And which eventually led to me doing the audience warm-up for Let's Make a Deal, where the elephant took a dump on the stage.
There you go.
It all comes back to the elephant. Every story will somehow relate to the elephant poop.
Yes.
Phil, how many years did you do audience warm-up?
That's a good question. No one's ever asked me that question.
Good job.
We talked about it before, Chef.
She's on plane.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we talked about
the question.
Yeah.
The question I have to think about. Okay, so like, started doing stand-up comedy in 1986. Found out that my son was going to be born in 1987. He was born in 1988. And I started doing warm up, because I wanted to stay off the road. So I would say a year. Because when I found out I was going to become a dad, that's when I started going, I got to figure out how to work and not be away from my wife and my kid. And then afterward, I continued to do that. You know, matter of fact, it was more than that. It was like a year and a half because I remember like David coming out and meeting Monty Hall, but as a baby, you know? Yeah. So he was born and he was around. So it had to have been a year and a half because right from Let's Make a Deal, Let's Make a Deal was the last warm-up I did.
Wow.
Oh, okay. After that, I auditioned for Nick, you know that show?
This show.
Yeah, that show.
I got the phone call to go out to the audition like maybe a month after I told my agent, I want to do this now. Here's the other thing. It was the only show I ever auditioned for.
It's wild.
I never auditioned for another show in that time. I went out for the one and got it.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Meant to be.
Yeah.
Because
we have to wrap up because it's past 8. I think someone else is waiting to come into the room. But thank you guys for coming to the panel.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Phil, for being here. Give Phil a round of applause, please. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for being here, Phil. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
And thank you guys for being here, too.
And welcome back. We really hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Phil Moore as much as we did. We definitely want you to follow him on Instagram at PhilMoreForYou, number 4. And we're going to have that in our show notes as well.
Yeah, and I'll link it as well. And shout out to Preston Burt for having us again. And also, please follow Southern Fried Gaming Expo. It's SF Gaming Expo. And I think passes for next year might be already available. So please attend the con. Like, it's really fun. And I think that it's a really cool, chill weekend. Even if you go, like, for a day. Like, Saturday is the day to go, probably, though. But Friday or Saturday, but definitely try to go for the whole weekend because it's one of the more affordable conventions in Georgia, to be honest with you. So, and it's a fun time. You get to play video games as much as you want to, and it's like games you're not going to play again unless you're at something like that or you find like a cool arcade or something. You know what I mean?
A little bit of nostalgia. Go back, play some pinball.
Yeah,
keep my high score of 7 million points, which sounds like a lot when you're like, oh, 7 million,
dude.
Nah. Only bad experience I have is when it was like 4 o'clock and it was like 4:01. The guy's like, "Your game's over."
Leave. Oh, that's like, right. Yeah, Chris like, got yelled at.
I was like, "Come on." He's like, "No." He's like, "You're done." I'm like, oh, "Whatever."
Yeah.
It was hilarious because I've been waiting all day to play Venom, and I finally got to play Venom for like 3 or 4 minutes. But
and thanks for holding it for me because the Foo Fighters one. Yeah,
I got Foo Fighters like literally 30 seconds after you left,
dude,
and I had to play it for like 10 minutes while you were gone. I messaged you. I was like, "Hey, I got the game," but I didn't know if you had signal or anything like that. Yeah. So I was just like, "Okay." And like I said, my games were about 1.5 to 2 minutes long because I have not played pinball in so long. Like I'd lose the ball left and right. I was like, that was hilarious because like Foo Fighters always like. Within the first 30 seconds, it was lit up so that you got your ball back.
Yeah.
Because I guess they realize people suck at it sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And it was just hilarious because, like, my games were... So I had to play, like... I probably played, like, 15 games while you were gone. Because I was, like, playing and trying to keep the game going. Like,
and there's some really cool stories within the pinball game. Like, you can watch the screen and it tells you a narrative, which is kind of cool for pinball. In addition to panels and stuff, there's Saturday morning cartoons where you go to a room and you get to watch Saturday morning cartoons and eat Pop-Tarts. Like, come on, man. If you're a 90s kid, even 80s kid, even a kid in general, just a nice person that likes cartoons, yes, you would probably want to do that on Saturday, Sunday. And there's wrestling. If you guys like wrestling, I'm not a huge wrestling fan. I used to be a wrestling fan as a kid, but there's like a wrestling match on Friday and Saturday, and there's also like a spicy pepper competition. So it's very like old school 90s TV Nickelodeon vibes. It's just a really fun time.
We expect to see you all at 2024 Southern Fried Gaming Expo.
Yeah, and congrats to them for making it to 10 years. That was their 10th year. So yeah, started in 2013 and this is their 10th year in 2023. So thank you again for having us, and we hope you let us come attend the con and cover it again next year. Thank you guys for listening to Epic Breweries Media Podcast. Episode 2 finally dropped. This is a moment of pride and achievement. Is that applause I hear?
I don't know. Is it applause that we hear? Oh, you don't know which ones.
Yeah.
Okay. We won't take the guess on anymore.
Oh god. Oh, okay. I'm not good at this.
Yeah, that's why I was like, maybe after the first one, we should just not.
I think I got it. Hold on. If I'm right, you owe me some boba tea.
I mean,
I like mango boba.
I don't care. It takes you 4 times to get that right. Just
dude,
kidding.
I haven't powered up the Rodecaster in like 4 months. So for me to go get what? 4?
Nope.
1 out of 4 is actually not that bad.
Nah, I don't. This isn't counting.
Whatever,
I'm not letting you do that.
Fine. What I promise you.
You promise me nothing.
That mochi ice cream from H Mart.
You like? I don't like mochi.
Dude, you're crazy.
I don't like mochi.
So I got to deal with.
Yeah, no. Sorry. I like H Mart, and they had some stuff that looked interesting, like flavor-wise. H-Mart's amazing. I'm not a big fan of the mochi. It's a texture thing for me.
Got it. I think it's delicious, but yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people do. I don't like gummy bears either.
But you love calamari, right? And you love rice.
Okay, calamari, rice. I like rice. I love rice.
You love rice now? We had to have a whole podcast about you loving rice.
I don't know why you think I hate rice.
We mentioned this on the last podcast.
Because you have got it in your head for some reason. Other than it's just... Because it annoys me now at this point.
Oh my god.
You have it in your head that I don't like rice. I like rice.
Okay, fine. You like rice. Okay.
Don't like mochi though. And Chris, I do not like sharks. Calamari or
calamari's
baby
not bad.
Squid or anything.
Yeah, it's not bad.
We found that was so sad that we saw the baby squids in the.
Don't tell them about that.
No, I've got to.
All right,
because these people need to know. All right, this is hard-hitting journalism.
Hard-hitting
journalism. Well, I can't say hard-hitting because it's not. But yeah, they apparently baby squid's a thing, and I get it. I know a lot of people probably already knew that, and I knew it in the back of my head. But I'm like, to see their little small
tentacles,
baby tentacles going.
Yeah, I know. It was just sad. If they are aliens, we're getting screwed when they come back.
Yeah, when they come back, be like, what have you done with our babies? Oh my god!
All this like UAP information going around. That's a whole other podcast, by the way.
Literally, it's a whole other podcast. Yeah. But, if you and all these disclosures that they're doing about UFOs and everything that the government's been doing the last couple of months, UAP,
the UAP podcast,
they are investigating it. So, you know, we like to throw out there.
That's a good
do
podcast,
it, and they do it in a way that like leave it up to you to make the decision.
Yeah, Stephen Diener hosts that podcast, and he does a really good job. I listen to it every week. So.
Yeah, some of the stuff.
Chris, don't be a hater. It's a good podcast.
Look, I love it. I think there's some stuff that they could do a little bit more research and in depth into.
I think it's a good podcast. No, Stephen Diener, if you want to be on our podcast, I would love to have you on the podcast.
It's a great
beginning. Chris might hate on your podcast, but I love it.
I'm not hating. It's a great introduction podcast to the UFO, UAP phenomenon.
Well, that's the level I'm at. That's what I'm saying.
Like, it's a great introduction. Yeah. It'll get you in there, and then it'll get you to where you can go down the rabbit holes and you can.
Yeah, I mean, I've been down the rabbit holes, but not as many times as you have.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, some of the stuff that they've talked about, like the Rendlesham Forest, and they talk about the.
We're going up on a whole different.
I know, we were going to outro this, and now we're going outro space.
This is like classic epic brief right now, actually, just ranting.
Like, for example, the Rendlesham Forest incidents, and they were talking about the message. They have other people and the guys in there have they actually translated the message.
Podcast.
Quiet, dude. They actually did that message and kind of translate it from the
people ones don't know what you're talking about. No, people listening right now don't know what you're talking about.
I know, but that's what I'm just saying.
Tell them where to go to listen to what you're talking about to get a nice deep dive. Give them a YouTube video title. They can Google it.
Oh, I don't know, but.
What's it called?
The Rendlesham Forest.
The Rendlesham Forest. Yeah. How would you spell that?
Couldn't tell you.
Rendlesham?
Can't tell you. I don't know.
That's my guess.
I don't know that.
Chris, you need to start your own like conspiracy theorist podcast. If you guys want Chris to start his own conspiracy theorist podcast, or not even conspiracy theorist, it's like a fan of... you know, UFOs, and he was going on rabbit holes. Please let this man know what you want him to do, because I feel like he'd be really good at it.
Somebody's going to have to talk to me about it, too, because I work one-on-one.
If you guys want to be Chris's co-host, please send your resumes to epicbrucemedia@gmail.com.
Or if you want Claudius to be the skeptic who asks the questions, just let him know that, too. Just kidding.
No, it'd be cool to have someone that's not me be your co-host, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be kind of cool.
That's true.
Anyway, we digress. Okay, we're going to outro this right now.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening to our episode 2 that finally is here, and I'm really proud of that. Thank you, Chris, for being here.
You're welcome.
For the episode, it's really cool recapping Southern Fried Gaming Expo with you. You can follow us Instagram @EpicBruceMedia. Emails, like I just told you guys, or asked you guys, sorry, told you guys. I just asked you to email epicbrucemedia@gmail.com. And did I say .com before? I hope I did. When I told them to send their resume. Yeah, I did for this one. Yeah, I told you on Facebook, remember? Messenger.
You don't tell me
anything. I told you, Kate and Jamie. We have like a group chat.
You don't tell me nothing. I don't have access to that email address. That doesn't exist.
Whatever.
You're kicking me out of the podcast.
No. So yeah, you can email those and follow us on Instagram. We're still on Facebook, but I'm not running the Facebook. Do you want to do that? I'm putting you on the spot. Do you want to run the Facebook page?
Yeah, I can.
I'm not on there enough to do it. I don't know.
We'll work on it. We'll figure it out.
We're not going to say Facebook now. Just Instagram.
If you want to look at us and look at our older episodes and our older posts, they're there, but we don't have anything current because we're kind of, again, in a regrowing, restructuring phase, so we need to figure out where we're going to go with that.
Yeah. So check us out.
If you have any suggestions on what you want to see on Facebook, let us know.
Yeah. And if you guys don't even care, I kind of don't, to be honest with you, so it can just die and be fine. I know it sounds really harsh, but... we can do Instagram, we can do email, And of course, check us out on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom. We're on there under Epic Bruce Media Podcast. So please give us some listens and follow the podcast.
You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, now you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
And you'll be alerted to our new episodes.
They finally come
available. When they, yeah. When they,
yeah.
Every month when we do this on the 15th, because we're going to hold ourselves to it.
Also, Apple Podcast still has our old cover when we had that variety show stint, and I'm still asking them to update that.
Yeah, so, when we were trying to find ourselves, our lost post-college years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But now we're all grown up and know what we want, kind of, for the most part. But yeah,
somebody does.
Yeah, somebody does. Anyway, next episode, we're going to be talking about summer movies.
If there's any movies you want us to discuss... Mm-hmm. Go ahead and email us and let us know, or Instagram message us and let us know.
So yes, we can, please.
Look at it and decide if there's something that we talked about that we went and saw, or if it's something we need to catch up on between now and then.
I'm sorry.
We're recording this at like 11:34 at night, and he's just delirious with the with the crazies.
I had too much mochi today.
Yeah, but anyway, let us know what movies you'd like us to talk about or that you think we might have missed. And so if it's something that you want us to talk about and that we didn't, it'll give us an opportunity to check it out.
Yeah, and the reason we're doing this, which gives another purpose to the word media attached to the Epic Breeze, is like we are fans of, sound like I'm talking about myself, my podcast. We are fans of a lot of things like movies and games, and we like to go into events and music. We're doing our best to like focus on these things episode by episode, but give it a bit more like structure of within the episode, I should say. So anyone who loves movies and are, you know, into talking about movies or just listening to people talking about movies that they love, definitely please check out our next episode. We're going to be dropping every month on the 15th is what we decided on. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's like a nice in the middle of the month date, as Chris pointed out earlier. Nice, we're talking off mic or whatever. Yeah, exactly. So look for us on the 15th of every month. And I was rushing my thank you guys. Let me start over. Thank you guys for listening. I always like make it one sentence. I like speak so quickly sometimes. Please tune in to the older episode that dropped ages ago. And the future episodes coming up on the 15th of every month, and we hope you enjoyed this episode as well. So, you have anything before we get out of here, Chris?
Nope, I think you covered everything.
All right, sweet. Thank you, guys, and be sure to tune in for something. Okay, bye.
Epic Briefs Media Podcast is an Epic Briefs Media production. Tune in, follow, and subscribe on audioboom.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all popular podcast apps. See what we're up to on Insta at Epic Briefs Media, and feel free to reach out for a shout out, questions, comments at epicbriefsmedia@gmail.com. Thank you for your listens and time. Be sure to tune in for something epic.